Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2016. Lecture 21, delivered on November 8, 2016. The title of this lecture is Portfolio Construction.
Today, Portfolio Construction. As we come to the end of our happy time as a close family, we also come to the final parts of this course where I'm showing you the practice of creating your own portfolio, or at least understanding what you should be looking for if someone else is making a portfolio for you. As I've told you, everyone in this class, well, maybe a few of you won't, almost every one of you in this classroom will need to create some kind of a base for security in your old age. But it's not just in your old age. Creating this portfolio, as you should do when you get out and you get a job and you've got some money to spare, that should be something that is being done for other things as well. For example, a down payment on a house, preparing for your kids' college education, or other things of that kind. This is where you get sort of the basics of how that's done. Now, a lot of the math in this is pretty much no-brainer. And I mean, I'm not going to trivialize it, but at the same time, it's not difficult. The weighted return on a portfolio is the weight of each part of the portfolio times the return to that part of the portfolio. But one thing to be sure of, when you are creating a portfolio, just keeping an eye on it is not going to hurt you at all. Look, suppose that you have 100 shares of stock A. This is an equity portfolio, stock A. Now, you bought in on this one at $25 per share. And you're going to hold a round lot, 100 shares of stock B. Now this one, when you bought in, it was $32 per share. Now obviously these are kind of round, easy numbers. The real numbers would be dollars and cents and things like that. This is just for demonstration purposes. So At the beginning, when you've constructed the portfolio, you'll have $25 times 100 plus $32 times 100. And that means that you'll have $2,500 plus $3,200, which is going to be a total of $5,700. Now, your weights of the portfolio, weights in the portfolio, and again, this is, I mean, I don't want to make this look complicated. It's not, obviously. At the beginning, it's $2,500 over the $5,700. These are the weights of your portfolio. And $3,200 over $5,700. And that's going to come up to your grand total here of, that should come up to exactly 1.00, the full weight of the portfolio. I should do this right now, and I didn't make those numbers as convenient as I was planning to, but there you go. Let me really quickly get these numbers out here. Now, for God's sake, someone is checking my math here. How hard is it for me to have my calculator up? Oh, there it is. Okay. So it would be 2,500 divided by 5,700. So 43.86% is in stock A.
And then 3,200 divided by 5,700 would be 56.14%.
And that, of course, is the 100% of the portfolio. Those are your weights in the portfolio. I mean, like I said, this is kind of like no-brainer territory right here. The big part, though, is that the portfolio will not stay here. This is where you don't want to do this on some all-the-time basis. But if you're managing your own portfolio, these weights are going to drift against each other. You might have had every intention of making sure that stock B had the dominant position in the portfolio. However, over time, it might come to the point where stock A rises to $50 a share, stock B rises to $40 a share, stock A then becomes the dominant part of the portfolio. That unbalances the portfolio. It sends your beta into, well, here, suppose that the beta of these stocks, the beta of the first stock is, let's say, 1.2. The beta of the second stock is 1.4. Okay? So now we can calculate the beta of the portfolio. The beta of the portfolio is just going to be 46.86% times 1.2 plus 56.14% times 1.4. Now you crank those two out. Now I'm going to round here a little bit. So that would be times 1.4 plus 0.4686 times 1.2. So your beta of the portfolio is 1.35. That's your portfolio beta, just the weighted average of the betas. And I mean, if you took more finance courses, you would actually be doing this in practice. We've got a couple of courses here, and if you really want to get into finance, where you're managing actual money, two different ones. One's a fixed income portfolio, and one's a stock portfolio, and they're real money. And you are in charge of keeping an eye on things like your weights of the assets in the portfolio, your beta of the portfolio. Notice what happens, that if stock A begins to rise in price aggressively compared to stock B, the average the portfolio beta falls. On the other hand, if stock B starts to rise aggressively relative to stock A, the portfolio beta rises. Now, within this context, notice that these two betas are relatively close to each other. So the portfolio beta can't swing any more than 1.2 to 1.4. However, if the betas were widely separated, you could have the beta of the portfolio swing around quite a bit on you, and that's not good. If you are managing your own portfolio, you might end up having a risk profile in your portfolio you don't want. Like I said, you're not going to do this every day. But if you're managing other people's money or institutional money, you got to keep an eye on that beta, because it might even be the case that there's some rule, some requirement, some law, some regulation that says you can't have the beta be more than this or less than this or something like that. So you've got to keep an eye on the beta to make sure that it stays within your range that you want. Anyway, so what can happen? Okay, so the bottom line is just you've got your weights, you construct a portfolio of, and I told you a number of shares of stock that you might want to have. However, if you don't want to handle just individual stocks and build your 30 stocks for the portfolio and all that, you can buy mutual funds. Same rule applies there. You should not buy just one mutual fund. Buy a few. Maybe, I don't really know, honestly, back in the day, you could have in some of these self-managed retirement plans and self-managed savings plans, you could have more than a few mutual funds. I remember one I had was, I had four mutual funds in the portfolio, and each one of them had a beta. And so essentially, you still have that portfolio beta, which is the weighted average of the components of the portfolio. If I remember, at one time, the betas were all in a range from about 1.1 up to 1.5. And the way it was when I set it up was the weights were almost identical. They were all like 25%. But I just kind of ignored it for a long time, like 3 or 4 years. And I looked back, and those betas, or the weights, had changed dramatically. The beta that was one of the high beta portfolios went up a lot in value. Well, obviously, the greater the risk, the greater the expected return and all that. Well, surprise, surprise, the portfolio beta, because that one mutual fund had become more valuable relative to the others, the weights had changed, and the beta of the portfolio had made it up to a whopping 1.4 or something, 1.42 or something like that, which was not where I wanted it at all. I wanted it closer to 1. So even with mutual funds, you got the same thing. Watch your beta, control the beta. Now, the next part of this is the issue of, first of all, get your weights, and also remember to check your weights from time to time. Look at your return. Your return to the entire portfolio will be the weighted average of the returns to each of the individual securities in the portfolio. So in other words, if the return to stock A comes in at 12% and the return to stock B comes in at 15%, then the return to the portfolio would be the weighted average of those from those weights. However, there's something that I have to point out here. If you've gone, let's say, a year with your portfolio and you want to see what the return to your portfolio is, well, the easiest way is just how much did you pay for the portfolio to start with, how much is its value at the end of 1 year, and don't forget, if you're taking dividends, you have to add in your dividend yields as well. There's your total return. On the other hand, if you're doing it by components, make sure that you're looking at the weights at the end, not at the beginning, because the weights will change over time. Guaranteed they will, as the stocks go up and down against each other. Now comes the somewhat more interesting part of this. Now, going to you. Sir, are you going to manage your own portfolio, or are you going to have some professional manage it for you?
Probably have a professional.
You would? Okay. And a lot of people are going to be in your situation where they don't need the aggravation, and they'll pay someone else to do it. Madam, will you manage your own, or will you have a pro?
I'll have a pro.
Okay. You? Okay. Anyone in here planning to just handle your own portfolio over time? You are? Okay. Let me ask this of you. Where is your beta going to be? Just starting off, where are you going to try to aim the beta, the weight of the betas, okay? You got an idea of where you're going to try to land your beta? That's okay. You got to know, though, to build the portfolio, because if you just buy stocks, there are a couple things that can go wrong if you're buying just stocks in a portfolio. And even if you have, and this is the point, was most people are going to answer, I'm going to have a pro do my portfolio management. The problem is that the pro might not be doing what you want the pro to do, in the sense that you are still ultimately responsible for what happens in that portfolio. Don't forget that. Remember agency theory? The agent has an incentive to maximize his own interests at the expense of the principal. You are the principal. And this would be there's a little bit of fiduciary issue in here. However, for the most part, you are perfectly capable of monitoring and enforcing performance under the agency contract. So in other words, you as a principal still are ultimately responsible. So if that portfolio goes south, you cannot say, oh, I am an innocent victim. I was just standing there and this car drove down the road and ran over my sorry ass. You can't do that. Because, one, you're college educated. Two, you're more than college educated. You were educated in business. And three, you had the best damn business professor ever to walk the earth. Me. So, that means that at the end of the day, you do have responsibility. You can't claim fiduciary duty of the agent. He was responsible for everything because I couldn't monitor and enforce. Like, hell, you can't. Okay. So that means that you do have a responsibility to keep your eye on the portfolio that is being built. Now, back to the agency dilemma. I'm invoking what I taught you the second, third week of the course. I wasn't just blowing smoke up your butts with this. This is real, and this is where it begins to get even more real. Most financial managers are going to have some kind of a relationship with the vendors of securities products. There are many, many of them out there. They create packages of securities that they then try to convince financial planners, financial managers, wealth managers, brokers, stock brokers, to use for you. So what I'm saying here, and I took my students up to a place where they do this kind of stuff. They create the products. And then from there, they go out and they try to get your financial planner to embrace their products and sell those products to you. So in other words, if I am the broker, I'm going to tell you that I am busting my butt on your behalf. I really have I've worked day and night to build a portfolio just for you. Bullshit. I bought it from him. He convinced me to get that product so that I could give it to you. You know how he convinced me? A couple of bottles of Chivas Regal, two tickets to a Cubs game, when they're winners, not when they're losers. I would have thrown them back. And a great, great couple of days and nights at a seminar that they conducted for brokers around the country in Las Vegas. That's how they did it. So I can't emphasize this enough. You are still responsible because that agent has incentive to maximize his own interest. I have a big incentive to maximize my own interest. I'm not going to screw you over. But my thinking is going to be tainted by the things that happen to me on the way to doing good for you. You understand what I'm saying here? In other words, you still have that responsibility to watch your own back. Or ask me, because I am such a cantankerous old bastard, I won't take their money and their gifts. But let me show you something. Let's talk about getting rid of unsystematic risk. Remember I told you about systematic and unsystematic risk. Systematic risk, the total risk of the portfolio comprises the unsystematic risk. That's a risk that you can get rid of. And sometimes we call this diversifiable risk because you can diversify it away. And then there is the systematic risk. That's in the system. That's what you should be aiming at, burying. That's the risk that gets you an expected return. Systematic risk is called non-diversifiable. We can't get rid of it. And as I told you, a lot of the risk in any single stock that you buy is going to be unsystematic. You can get rid of it just by buying more different stocks, shaking them out, getting them out of the system, getting that peculiarities of one stock or another stock to cancel each other out so that you get the underlying risk profile of the portfolio coming through instead of the oddities of each individual security. This, interestingly enough, has so much to do with so many different things. In a small company, for example, you get the peculiarities of the individual personalities, which is what can cause great innovation, great creativity, but can also be extraordinarily destructive. In the large corporations, everyone is put under control, everyone is watched, and everyone's peculiarities shake out, and you get the productivity of the animal that is the corporation itself. And it's in so many other things, too. However, you can't just buy stocks willy-nilly and expect to get rid of unsystematic risk. In other words, the number of securities in your portfolio versus the risk profile of the portfolio, it's going to go down, but it's going to go down at a rate that is highly dependent upon how two stocks work together. Madam, you and I are both serial killers. That's a bad coupling. Because we're going to feed each other. You know, one night I'll say, let's go out and, you know, do ungodly things to people over on the north side of town. And then you're going to say, cool, tomorrow night let's do really bad things to people who go to sleazy bars. And I'll say, great. We're going to feed each other's worst aspects. If you, however, are a very upstanding, very straight-up good man, and I pair up with you, I'm going to say, let's go and kill some people, and you're going to say, no. And you're going to say, at some point, let's go out and convert people to the Flying Spaghetti Monster religion. And I'll say, no. You see, we'll suppress each other. We'll dampen each other out. I have no idea how this is going to correlate with what I'm trying to show you here, but what I'm trying to get at here is that you're going to get more faster with fewer stocks shake out of the unsystematic risk if you have stocks that are not correlated with each other as far as their price movements go. In other words, I shouldn't say this. Most stocks are going to move at least somewhat together. That is the systematic risk coming through. But they're also going to have these turns against each other that you want to cancel out. The correlation coefficient is what measures how much they are running together. You don't want them to run too much together because then you've got the two serial killers. I'm a cornflake cereal killer, and you are a Raisin Bran cereal killer. I should not have gone to hell with everyone. I can't make a good joke because no one appreciates it. Anyway, look. I want to look. This is, by the way, the portfolio visualizer. I discovered this long ago, and I mean, before it, I had to do this on my own in Excel, create a correlation matrix. And this actually does it for you. It shows how much stocks are correlated with each other. Remember, what you're doing in building a portfolio is trying to bring down the correlation coefficient between any two given stocks in the portfolio. You got to be a little careful. There's something else I'll mention it later. But okay, so. Well, let me put Google in here. Goog. Okay? Any other? Give me some stocks that you would... Huh? What's its trading symbol? Hang on, I got it. AMZN. Okay. AMZN. Any others? APPL, is it? Give me a retailer. Coke. Which one? Coke. A C-O-K-E, is it? Wait. I won't put in Coke, because then I might come up with someone like Martin Sheen. Is there some reason that sucked? Oh, okay. Coke, it is. Duh. Okay. I want something that's in the retail industry like, Which one? Walmart. What's it? WMT? WMT. WMT. Let me try, let's try something like, what's a clothing retailer? Strip clothing, mostly. Abercrombie and Fitch, A&F. That should be enough, just to give you a feel for what's going on here. A&F. Oh, and I want to do something that's more defense-related. Rockwell. Halliburton. Let's do Halliburton. H-A-L. Okay, now. Starting date, I'm just going to leave those. And we're going to look let's do the rolling on 90 days of trading. Okay, and view the correlation matrix. What's Apple symbol? AAPL. Okay, sorry. Okay, here we go. By the way, notice the annualized returns are there. The portfolio visualizer is really a nice little site. There are a lot of sites that are just crap, or they got all kinds of spyware, bloatware, and adware that hits you. These kinds of sites are just straight up, these are good guys that do these and all this, good companies. Okay, so now. Notice, of course, that you won't get a correlation on the diagonal because the correlation against a company against itself is 1. And the bottom, this is a symmetric matrix, so obviously the bottom and the top triangles will be the same. So let's look. Alphabet, that's Google against Amazon. Notice something interesting that, as one would expect, the more you get away from internet, like with Coke, Walmart, Abercrombie, the correlation coefficient goes down. You see that? How with Google, it's got a strong correlation with Amazon and Apple, but it has a weak correlation with Coke, Walmart, Abercrombie and Fitch. It has actually a little bit of a stronger correlation with Halliburton, which is a monster. Back in the early 2000s, it was like the evil of the universe. It was one of the big military suppliers for the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. It was run formerly by then Vice President Dick Cheney. It had been previously, I should say. Okay, now let's look at one like Amazon. Of course, Amazon against Apple, not surprisingly, fairly strong, but then against Coke, Walmart, you notice that Amazon it's actually not too bad against any of these companies except for Apple. Amazon against Apple is a little bit of a troubler. Apple against Coke, very weak. But against Halliburton, Apple is much stronger. That indicates that they have a lot of performance of their securities in common, which kind of worries you that Apple, which is supposed to be a benign consumer computer company, has a high degree of correlation, or at least a decent degree of correlation, against a war company, a company that profits from wars. Interesting little observation there. Coke against Walmart. Interesting. Look at that. What an odd little thing that Coke is actually not particularly correlated with even a company that sells its products. And so there are always going to be surprises. Again, Walmart against Abercrombie, little bit of more correlation there because they kind of crossed in, to a certain extent in the retail business, not much. But Walmart against Halliburton got real low correlation. And Abercrombie against Halliburton, strange, a little bit more, not too much. This, however, what you would probably want to do is to create a rule for your correlations. Now, what kind of a rule would you, what would be a good correlation that you would want to have as sort of your semi-hard limit? Probably around 0.3. You can find 0.3 to 0.35. Even 0.35 is a little bit steep. 0.3 to 0.32, and say any two stocks that are above that limit there, I probably wouldn't want to have in the same portfolio. Now, you might have a few that would violate the rule somewhat, but man, when you get up to 0.4, 0.5, that's not a good place to be. That's not a good place at all to be. Now, I'm going to go back here, and I can't remember the name of this site at all. So bear with me while I... Oops, that's not what I wanted. I can't remember what the name of the site is because I don't use it anymore until I just go to stock by stock. Let me try it. Beta stock beta calculator. Come on, I might not be able to do that one. CAPM calculator, nah. I'm not gonna find it here. But one way or the other, the bottom line of this one is that correlation coefficients it is designated by the Greek letter rho, which looks sort of like a rounded off P. Okay. Now, ideally, well, rho is between 0 and 1. Although you can find stocks that are, let me put this, almost always it's above 0. However, there are some kinds of stocks that have slightly negative correlations. And I mentioned this before. You'll see the betas are also this way. Sometimes a beta can be less than 0. What happens with these stocks is that a stock that has a beta, that is negatively correlated with other stocks, generally speaking, is what we call a contrarian stock. A lot of these stocks, if you have negative correlation between two, that's not a good thing unless you want a portfolio that is going to run very counter to the market. The problem with putting a negative correlation coefficient, a stock that has negative correlation coefficient, into a portfolio of stocks that have positive correlation coefficients, modestly positive, is that the one that has a negative correlation with the other stocks is going to defeat the purpose of the other stocks. It's going to hurt them. It's going to take them down. And so what would happen is if I put in a stock that had a negative correlation in a portfolio of stocks, and I have one that has a negative correlation with all of the other stocks in the portfolio, that stock is actually going to damage the return that you get from the portfolio. It's literally going to drag down the portfolio's performance. So you want to avoid those kinds of stocks unless you really, really hate the market. And then you would build a cluster of stocks that have negative betas. And those are usually gold stocks, gold mining stocks, gold investment stocks, speculative stocks in metals of various kinds. Those are the kind that have negative betas. Boy, I wish I... No, that's that Excel thing. I didn't want to do it. Stock beta. Stock beta list. Maybe that's what I'm looking for. I used to do this anymore. Like I said, when I'm looking for stock betas, I just look at a traditional place like finance.yahoo.com or something a little more serious than that. Well, I'll be darned. ABG Analytics has got, oh, well, there we go. Which one are you going to look at? Oh, this is actually one of the ones that I know about. I didn't know that ABG did it. You're a long-term investor. You're going for the long-term, the long-haul beta. Not that one that's being whipped around by current circumstances. That's a bad idea to use that one. But now if you look here, okay. What you would want to do is you would say, all right, I'm going to look at stocks. I'm fairly defensive investor. I want to pull stocks between 0.6 and 0.8. And then the beta of my portfolio would be the weight of each of those stocks in the portfolio times the beta of that particular stock and add them up. So now, as you go down through this list, notice a couple of patterns. Let me back this off, see if I don't know if you can still see that. Can you see that in the back? Okay. Let me pull it up a little bit. Anything that strikes you right off the top of your head about stocks that have high betas? Anything?
They're all banking.
Well, not all of them, but there is a banking, definite banking component. That, okay, politically speaking, there is a strong push to bring the big banks under control. They've just gone through one scandal after another after another. They just can't stop being bad things. And there are a couple of people in Congress that are just pounding to stop this nonsense. At the same time, we also know that neither of the two major political candidates has any particular interest in really reforming the banking industry. So what we're probably going to end up seeing is ultimately the market itself will spank the crap out of these companies, these banks that are being such idiots about their practices, their business practices. Wells Fargo was the latest. Bank of America is a serial scandal company. But notice, do you see another company in there that's got a pretty darned high beta right now? Any stock you see that has a high beta? Should be of interest to you folks. A lot of you are going to be lining up for jobs for that with that company.
Caterpillar.
Oh, look at that. That's a seriously high beta. That's a high-risk stock. Caterpillar has lost a lot of its luster. The company spent far too many years obsessed with accounting profit. It did not believe that finance had something to say. You don't care about profit, you care about free cash flow. And so the company starved itself. As its profit looked good year over year over year, the company was starving to death for free cash flow. Well, they finally figured it out. But by the time they figured it out, it was pretty much too late to avoid a crisis. So anyway, going down through the list, again though, notice the banking sector and its profile. But you notice also we've got Dow Chemical at a very high beta. That's a seriously high beta. And then you've got Devon Energy, eBay, Ford at a very high beta. Freeport-McMoRan, that's not surprising. Freeport-McMoRan is an old, old company. Does anyone know what Freeport-McMoRan does? I actually did not know much about the company myself until I got into international consulting. And I ended up doing a consulting gig trying to get a permit to do some mining exploration on an Indonesian island called Sulawesi. And it was a long process with a lot of bribes that had to be paid to different politically connected people. And you were trying to get a kind of permit just to go there and explore. It was called a Kuasa Pertambangan. And we got it, but the big 800-pound gorilla in Indonesia was this company, Freeport-McMoRan, which had decades, maybe even a century earlier, been in Indonesia, and they ran into a mountain that was basically made of copper. The mountain was copper, and they've been mining it ever since. And they've spread out from there, but literally, their operation is fascinating. They've cut into the mountain at the base, and then they dig out copper, and the mountain drops, and then they do it again and again. That's Freeport-McMoRan. And of course, that's a metal. Metals are risky. They are commodities, and you've got more risk in commodities. So you're going to see that rather surprisingly in these, not surprisingly. But look at the other financial services companies. Sachs is in there, Halliburton, a war company. War is great business, but it's also rather risky. I should point that out. Okay, look at all the other betas that are high. Morgan. Interestingly, MasterCard. MetLife. Oh, gee. I'm taking you through this because, actually, this is better than I was hoping for to show you. Just to give you a sense of what kinds of stocks have what kinds of betas. Notice Walmart. Just essentially, it's so big that there's very little risk of that company. But then you get other companies that are similar. Well, interestingly, though, notice that the retail industry, Target, that's a safer beta. What the heck is a Southern company? I'm not familiar with that one. Now, I'll be honest with you. I don't watch all companies. But, of course, Pepsi. You're never going to have Pepsi go away. Some people hate Pepsi, but everyone drinks pop, soda pop, so it won't go away. Morgan Stanley. Okay, so the bottom line is that, oh, that's interesting. Monsanto has come up pretty heavily recently. Well, not recently. But the bottom line is this. If you're thinking about stocks and you're just starting to screen, know that you're probably going to get into higher risk betas with securities that are banking related, commodities related. Safer betas tend to be, and there's no absolute rule, tend to be in the big companies that are retail oriented. They've been around forever. Do you shop at Target? Do you ever go to Target? Target. I mean, most people do, especially their demographic is young people. They've had the intelligence to begin to spread out so that they can begin to demographically track you so that when you're finished with college and you're a young, upwardly mobile professional, you'll still go to Target as your life goes on. Target was smart enough to begin to build that, essentially that beachhead that will catch your wave and ride with it for the most of the rest of your life. In about 40 years, 30 years, they'll start selling more products for you as you get old. For you, when you're starting to need the Metamucil. For you, when you'll start to need the Depends. And those kinds of things. So they'll just keep riding that wave. It's a smart strategy for them to do. Walmart. Walmart's never going to be go away because there is always going to be a very large class of people who are Walmart people. And they will always be there. There was one I wanted to check real quick here. Interesting with Disney did not used to have a high beta. Why is Disney a higher beta company than it used to be? I mean, it's Disney. What's made Disney a riskier company in recent years? Anything? What's Disney? Yeah. They're what?
The hurricane.
Well, that's an interesting thing. You're going to see betas going up. I'm glad you brought that up. One thing that companies that are heavy, fixed capital base in the areas where global climate change is going to have the greatest impact are going to suffer the most. Many companies are pulling in off the coast. It's happening. Whether you believe that global warming is caused by humans or because of just the earth itself, denying that it's happening ain't the way businesses are working it now. Almost no business that has any brain whatsoever does not recognize that the earth is changing, and it's changing dramatically, and it's going to be a disaster for companies that are fixed on the coasts of the United States or on the coasts of other countries. That's why many companies are moving their manufacturing to higher ground, for lack of a better term, moving inland, moving to places that have higher elevations along the coastal areas. Some companies can't do it. They can't move. Disney is one of them. Disney World and Disneyland are on the coast. They can't pick those up and put those in Nebraska. So they're just going to have to ride that out. So that's a very good point you're making there. Wasn't what I was looking for, but yours is actually better than mine. Disney has begun to venture into a lot more of higher-end production. They bought, of course, what was the big thing that they bought a couple of years ago? The whole franchise. Yeah, Lucas Productions, which just made... I just keep having nightmares of Darth Vader coming into a room and sounding like Mickey Mouse. You have failed me for the last time! And Princess Leia dressed... Well, she always did have those kind of mouse ears. Maybe she really was Minnie Mouse all along. I don't know. Where the hell was I? Okay. Just know that when you build your portfolio, watch your betas. Screen the betas. Decide who you are as a beta. What's your beta? And then build your portfolio. Keep an eye on the weighted average of the betas because that's your portfolio. If the betas swing against each other, that gets to be risky. Now, I'm going to give you a quiz here, just a little pop quiz, and then that's all I have for you after the quiz is over.